This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. Originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, Robin Dow is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. It is the fourth day of November 2024. This is the anniversary 16 years ago when Barack Obama was elected in 2008 on this date. And it was 45 years ago that hostages were taken in Iran, which affected the 1980 presidential election quite dramatically. Tomorrow, the marquee item is the election for president, with the major parties expecting to get well over 95% of the votes. Kamala Harris for the Democrats, Donald Trump for the Republicans, and we'll be talking about that. But here in East Baton Rouge Parish, we've got a few items on the ballot. A couple of congressional seats are now intersecting our community. Julia Letlow is up for re-election, and a newly created black majority district is in the offing with Cleo Fields and Elbert Guillory, the major candidates, along with Quentin Anderson, who's run a viable campaign. But in the end, it's expected to be whether Cleo Fields is in a runoff with Guillory or if he wins in the primary. Again, your number is 877-217-5757. And some interesting ballot measures that we'll talk about with Jim Brand in the back half of the hour. Steve Myers, candidate for mayor, is in the House later. We start with Louis Owens Unglesby, one of the most famous trial lawyers in Louisiana history. And when he was promoted as a guest today, a listener asked and mentioned that you and Mary Olive Pearson were contemporaries. I think this is your first appearance on the show since she died. She was truly a force of nature, was she not?
Wonderful lady, just a wonderful, wonderful person to have for a friend, and a great lawyer to work with, just super good person.
And if I recall, your first day on the job working for Sam D'Amico, you got immersed in a political campaign. Here's a young lawyer expecting to go to the courthouse. Instead, you were involved in a race for judge, and I think Sam was on the other side of a race with Mary Olive, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. She wanted to be in public service very badly. It's a shame for Baton Rouge we never could elect her to something. It was good for me because I got to work with her as a lawyer, but in terms of her wishes, she really did want to be in public service. And, of course, she did represent a lot of the mayors mm-hmm. and different people like that over the years.
Well, she was a fine lawyer, and she was from the left side of the political spectrum. A few weeks ago, we had your colleague E. Eric Gayrard on, who's a big Trumper, as is Gordon McKernan, I understand. And these are guys, of course, are advertising lawyers who, as I noted with Eric, they represent a lot of poor black people who probably aren't Trumpers. But that's what makes the world go round. And it's nice that we can have disparate points of views and get along well with each other. But this has been a race that has not brought out the best in some people, between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. What do you make of it?
Well, I don't want to comment on the politics of everything. I'm just here to, as a lawyer, to say that if Eric Gayrard and Gordon McKernan as examples of for Donald Trump, that's not representative of lawyering. Donald Trump has proven, for one thing, for sure, he can't withstand cross-examination and he's a coward. Beyond that, I don't know, but in the law business, he's had four opportunities to defend himself and refused all four times, at the same time saying that people take the Fifth Amendment are only the people in the mob. And in his two civil cases where he tried to testify, he managed to lose over $500 million. So clearly, Trump is not a reliable person when you put him under oath.
Well, he also has refused to be under oath. Remember, he was subpoenaed to testify before Congress and didn't appear. Bill Clinton answered every subpoena when they were going after him on Monica Lewinsky.
You would like to think, as a man and as a citizen, that a person who has an opportunity to say what he wants to say on behalf of his position would always welcome that, and that putting his hand on the Bible and raising his right hand to swear to tell the truth would be something that would be second nature to him, because as a leader of the free world, he always wanted to tell the truth. With Trump, he's a little girl when it comes to manning up and standing for anything. And it's very, very disappointing to me that my demographic, according to the polls, is largely for Trump, because mm-hmm. there's nothing admirable about this guy.
All right. Well, there are a lot of little girls who stand up and fight, and they may do it in a different way. And you and I, we've been in a few fistic encounters in our careers. I doubt that Donald Trump's been in many, if any.
No, but I mean, just look at the record. Trump could have testified. First, he could have testified for all of his friends, like Giuliani, who are having their watches seized and things, for lawsuits that were found where they were found at fault that Trump hid from. But in the cases he participated in, January 6th, he wouldn't testify, although he caused it. Now, he's in Washington. He was the commander-in-chief. You would think that a grand jury would certainly mm-hmm. understand and appreciate his positions, whether they turned out to be right or not, if they were well-intentioned. He wouldn't testify in Georgia, where he's calling up the governor trying to look for votes. He certainly could have explained that if he had an explanation that was legitimate. Again, it doesn't matter if he turned out to be wrong. It wouldn't have been criminal if he had good intentions. He wouldn't testify in Palm Beach. Now, he lives in Palm Beach in the documents, classified documents cases, down the street from his mansion. That's his. If there is right. a constituency in which Donald Trump should get 90% of the votes, you'd think it's Palm Beach, Florida, and he wouldn't testify mm-hmm. in that case. And then in New York, which again is just a walk from Trump Tower to the courthouse where he was being tried, he refused to testify, got convicted of every count. Why would a guy like that want to be in charge of anything?
Well, tomorrow we'll have Roy Fletcher on. I think Roy arrived a day early, by the way, and who knows, we might even put him on now. But he's a lawyer and a political consultant who believes Trump will win. The headline in the New York Times, "Tightest Contest in Decades Grows Tighter at Finish." And Trump, I think, as Jonathan Carl of ABC said yesterday, if he wins, it'll be the greatest comeback in American political history, even bigger than Richard Nixon in 1968. And to give him his due, Louis Unglesby, he is resilient. He keeps coming. And if I had four indictments, I don't think I'd be running for any office, much less president. But some people believe he is a tough guy. Maybe not tough physically, but tough emotionally in other ways. You called him a little girl. Why did you do that?
Because he doesn't stand up for the American system. I'm a lawyer. And Trump goes out on the courthouse, every courthouse that he's required to go to, and always says terrible things about the lawyers, terrible things about the judge, terrible things about the citizens who are making the judgments. Now, the courthouse is the one place where, unlike even your show, where you have to answer the question you're asked. You can't. You know, politicians and public figures are great at saying whatever they want to say, independent of what is the issue in front of them, and diverting and deflecting from it. In the courtroom, you've got to say, did you see the red light? Was it, what color was it?
Okay.
Trump can't do that because that would require him to lie.
877-217-5757 is your number. And talk at talklouisiana.org. And here is Hal in Monroe, who asks, and we will go to the phones in just a moment if you'd like to get in again, 877-217-5757. But Hal in Monroe says, through in your career, you probably have advised clients at times not to take the stand.
Sure, but they weren't trying to be president or president of the bank. They might have been robbing the bank or trying to rob the bank. They weren't trying to be president of the bank. It's a difference in what your goal is.
Well, and he said he would take the stand in a few of his trials, and he did not. He opted not to, although he was making comments at the table, saying it was BS and using stronger language than that. And I thought the judges went easy on the guy. So he's going to be sentenced. If he's president, obviously he's not going to jail. But if he loses this election, he could be sentenced to some time in jail. What would that do to the country and to him personally?
Well, I think the crime, that's the Stormy Daniels case.
Right.
And I doubt that is a jailable offense probably someone 79 years old at the first conviction. It just on paper, you wouldn't expect that they would get a harsh sentence for that.
It was 34 felony counts, though.
But he did require the government to put themselves to the proof, and some judges take the position that if you want a trial, then you get some time.
Let's go to Skipper in Gonzales. Skipper, good morning. You're on.
Yes, I had a couple of quick questions for the attorney. Trump was having to pay a fine for $500 million for borrowing money, if I get this right, paying it back early, and even the banker said they wished that they had loaned him more money. Do you think, honestly, that politics played a role in his conviction in that case?
All right.
Now, I think you're talking about the inflating assets argument case.
Yeah.
Honestly, Skipper, I don't recall if that's a civil or a criminal case. I thought it was a civil case.
We'll be back with more after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Louis Unglesby's in the house, never afraid to say his piece. And he is from the left side of the spectrum. Roy Fletcher tomorrow, he'll be from the right. 877-217-5757. Tensions are high. It's still muddled as to who will win the 2024 presidential election, and it comes down to a turnout race. It's going to be most likely close, although most observers, not just James Carville, but most observers believe in the end that of the seven so-called swing states, about five of them will move in the same direction, meaning that one of the candidates will win comfortably. But there are some weird things going on. And in the last poll in Iowa, Harris is actually ahead of Trump. If that were to happen, she would be the president of the United States. But you can pick your poll, and you can find a way to make a case for either candidate. 877-217-5757. And as far as the four indictments that Skipper, the one you were talking about was a civil case, the four cases that Trump was involved in are the Stormy Daniels hush money case, of which he was convicted, the documents case in Florida, which has all but been thrown out, and then in Washington, D.C., Jack Smith has a widespread investigation about overthrowing the election, and so does Fonnie Willis. And Smith's case also involves some financial improprieties that are alleged. But those cases will all be put on hold if Trump wins. And he is 78 years old, and if he wins, we all have a shelf life. And Trump is showing some wear and tear. Yesterday in North Carolina, he thought he was in Pennsylvania. And you can only imagine if Joe Biden had made that gaffe, and he tried to introduce a Senate candidate from Pennsylvania while he's campaigning in North Carolina. But campaigns are tough, and Trump is out there three, four times a day. And it'll wear down much younger guys. I remember Bill Clinton in 92 completely lost his voice, but he was still making appearances up until the very end, and you couldn't hear a word he was saying. Miriam in Mandeville, let's be brief and slide in as many as we can in our time with Louis Owens Unglesby. Miriam, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Miriam.
Hi. Mr. Unglesby, do you think Trump's disregard for the public process and for the rule of law is a threat to our country's financial stability? Thanks.
I couldn't speak to finance. As you asked that, I'm not qualified to talk about the financial stability of the country. I think that Trump is a threat to the fabric of democracy in the context that all of us in America are flag-waving Americans. We're all patriotic people by nature, and that's based on this fundamental concept of equality and justice and fairness for each other. And so any of us who disregard that are diminishing our heritage, and certainly the person in charge is making fun of all those wonderful monuments that give you all of that inspiration that exists in Washington, D.C.
And I knew this would come up, and a few listeners have said, what about Donnie Swaggart, who has a church down the street with his father and his son, a family worship center, and I used to work for the Swaggarts many years ago, like 42 years ago. But Donnie kind of went off the deep end this weekend, and Bill Bryan says, play it, Jim. I dare you to play it. Okay. Well, Robin Dow, I motioned Donnie Swaggart, and she's at the ready to play Donnie Swaggart, who he's developed into a really fiery preacher, and now he's delving into politics from the pulpit. Here he is.
Now, I'm fixing to make some people mad right now. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to be, from the statement I'm about to make, I'm going to be called a racist. And I will be called every name under the sun. But somebody needs to stand up and speak to the black church. When the largest African-American Pentecostal denomination, when that leader stands up and said, I endorse that woman, he was saying, I endorse murder. I endorse homosexuality. I endorse lesbianism. I endorse transgenderism. I endorse every evil that hell could prosper or bring up to the right. That's wrong, folks. And the black church votes predominantly for the party that is anti-God. What's going on here?
All right, I think we've heard enough of Brother Donnie, who, Lewis, I know you used to represent those that family when they would occasionally have a brush with the law.
I would be happy to represent
Brother Jimmy rather well.
Understand. You know, I think we quit teaching civics in America. I really think that, because the first thing we did was separate church and state. And that was the foundation of how we got our country. And the second thing we did, Ben Franklin created public schools and libraries. And we seem to be wanting to diminish both of those things. And then we put up the Statue of Liberty as a knowledge of how much we appreciated all the immigrants. I'm confused now with my history when I hear some of the things that are going on out of Trump and the Trumpers.
Well, what about these preachers? And I'm not just picking on Donnie here, but we have this separation of church and state. You're not supposed to talk like that from the pulpit. And I see people on the left and the right, rabbis doing it. What is going on? Should they have their tax-exempt status examined?
I'm not a theologian. I can't comment on any of that. I'm just saying that fundamentally, in the construct of the free democracy of America, those are certain lines that we've tried to never cross.
Rebel in Sherwood. Hello, Rebel. Good morning.
Jim and sir, thank you very much. I agree with you completely. I have two questions for you, sir. First, what are some of the legal maneuvers that the Republican Party is engaging in? I think setting records that are gumming up the works for voting and counting the votes. And secondly, do you believe, as many people, that January 6th was a coup?
All right, January 6th and the prelude to the election as far as potential challenges. What do you make of this?
Well, January 6th was a tragedy from the perspective of anyone trying to rewrite the Constitution to fit what they wish it were. And I got to give Mike Pence, who I thought was kind of a putz the whole time I ever observed him, but he manned up when it came time and did the right thing, as did most of the senators and congressmen, not all of them necessarily the ones that I know. But as far as the first question, certainly anything that interferes, you know, it's fundamental. You get 51, I get 49, you win, I shake your hand and thank you. At every football game, the coaches cross the field and shake hands and pat each other on the back and wishes them the best for the next game, even though maybe they think the referee made some bad calls. Only in this current situation does poor sportsmanship and denial mm-hmm. of reality seem to have legs.
And Dennis Allen, Saints coach, was fired today. First two games of the season, they were the best in the NFL, and the last seven the worst, and 2-7 will get you a trip to somewhere else. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guest. This question is really for Jim. WRKF, how do they plan to cover the election tomorrow night?
All right. I don't work at the station, but I know they'll be covering it, probably a lot of national coverage, and I know there will be some local involvement as well from WRKF. And, of course, the reporters from National Public Radio cover the news and this election better than you'll hear anywhere else. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Lewis.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Unglesby, the Republicans like Trump and the Fox Channel have accused many times the Democrats of being responsible for the high prices at the supermarket. And the Democrats have never responded as I would. It's a fact that Trump added $7.8 trillion to the debt. That debt has to be constantly refinanced. That's why home mortgages are so high.
All right. The debt is one of those issues that is not sexy enough to talk a lot about. But long term, like climate change and coastal erosion, it's a big, big, big issue. As we hear Sanford and Son from Quincy Jones, who died at 91. We'll be back with Lewis Unglesby. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Lewis Owens Unglesby. 877-217-5757 is your number. And Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on Talk Louisiana on Election Eve. Trish, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. This is in regard to your conversation about separation of church and state.
Yes.
In my opinion.
I don't know.
A preacher can say whatever he wants to say. That, we have free speech. The problem is when the state tries to impose a particular kind of religion on the country. I mean, some people could even argue that putting a Christmas scene is government advocating Christianity. So,
well, it's an age-old question, and we tend to like it okay when our particular religion is acknowledged by the state, and sometimes don't like it when others are, but why is Christmas, for example, a federal holiday and a state holiday? That is certainly the most Christian of holidays, and it is you can't make a statement that it's not a religious holiday, but it is. But we have this argument that goes on quite often as to whether we're a Christian nation or a nation of Christians. But sometimes when sectarian prayers are delivered at sporting events or in other places, it's offensive to people who Jewish tradition or others, and I can understand that. Robin has one more cut for Lewis Unglesby to bite on. Donald Trump, as we know, is a guy who goes off script, and he is really having a stream of consciousness moment or two as he finishes his pitch to be president of the United States in his third quest. Here he is yesterday.
Absolutely, but I could have been on the best beaches in the world. I own the best beaches in the world. I could have had such time. I could have been at the Great Turnberry in Scotland. I could have been anywhere I wanted to be. I could have had those waves smacking me in the face. I could have said that white, beautiful white skin that I have would be nice and tan. I got the whitest skin because I never have time to go out in the sun, but I have that beautiful white, and you know what? It could have been beautiful, tan, beautiful. But you know what?
Lewis, he is a guy who's entertaining, if nothing else.
I guess. I just trying to imagine what would happen if I did that in front of a jury, either with them or with the judge. It's a fascinating way to avoid talking about what's your plan for Russia. Which is what, you know, American citizens need to be hearing right mm-hmm. now. And Grand Coteau, by the way, to the lady who called in, I went there once, a magnificently beautiful place.
Well, really, yeah, it is. Really we've got a lot of
beautiful
southwest places,
Louisiana area.
A lot of beautiful places in Louisiana, but you have made it clear you're no fan of Donald John Trump. But are you going to be able to get up on Wednesday morning if he's elected president, Lewis?
Well, sure, because the legal system perseveres no matter what. That's why one of the reasons I don't like Trump is because he denigrates probably the most democratically, and by that I mean small d, democratically encouraged part of the government. only in the courtroom do citizens get to come down, be on the jury, make the decision. You go to the state legislature and see how often you can talk to the governor or the president or the senator or something. But in the courthouse, you have full authority. Likewise, those who come there and want to use the courthouse have to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, whether they like it or not. To denigrate that system is antagonistic to the best angels of America.
Well, with Trump talking about his white skin, I think it would only be appropriate if he were to have an event in a swimsuit, since he had all these beauty pageants and the contestants had to be in swimsuits. And one of those was in Baton Rouge. Remember the Miss USA pageant? And he was on stage with the winner, if I remember right. That was 2014, just before his big rise. And he told some people, and it got back to me, that he really enjoyed his meal at the Frustop before he went to the beauty pageant. And I'm told that when you have a jury trial, you go to the Frustop to wait it out. Am I right? Or if I
I go there and eat once for sure, out of superstition. I've been doing that since 1974. I always eat at the Frustop, one meal, for sure.
All right. James and Metairie, please be brief. James, you're on with Lewis. You'll be our final caller for Lewis Owens Unglesby today.
Well, thank you, Jim, and to your guests. You know, our country suffered major attacks in the past 100 years, December the 7th, September 11th, and January the 6th. The first two were attacks by foreign enemies. The January 6th attack was by domestic enemies. That's what Trump does. He spurred this on, influenced an attack on our wonderful country.
All right, and James is a Vietnam veteran who served our country, unlike Trump and Biden, who got doctor's excuses to stay out of that war. But we haven't had a war hero as president in a long time. Lewis, what about the tenor of the country right now? It's terribly divided. And on January 6th, Trump says it was a love fest, and most of us could call it an insurrection.
I'm not buying, maybe I'm running against the currents here, but I'm not buying into the idea that there really is that much division. I think that there were those people on January 6th who were crazy and were wrought up by Trump and made some terrible, terrible decisions. I think that it's outrageous that he hasn't stepped forward and said, I'm responsible for all this. Let me be the one to go to court and take the responsibility if there is any. It's not my followers. But certainly January 6th is something that the rest of the world looks at with tremendous dismay, and I think probably the great majority of citizens.
Thank you, Lewis Unglesby. Always a pleasure. Keep going. You inspire some of us who are a few years behind you. I want to be like you when I grow up. Here is Jim Brandt, another guy who's a survivor. Many of us remember him as head of the Public Affairs Research Council. He's managing principal of Brandt & Associates, and he's a great friend of WRKF. And he follows the news closer than anybody else and has done a fact check on yours truly a time or two, and I appreciate that. And he resides here in Baton Rouge with his lovely wife, Janie. And you're not all that happy about one particular item on the ballot tomorrow. What is it?
Well, actually, it's an item that should have gotten a lot more attention but hasn't, because it's obviously the mayor's race is red hot and the intense interest in the presidential race. But there are some important amendments on the ballot, and particularly it would amend the Home Rule Charter in East Baton Rouge Parish. Now, this is a big deal, and they're proposing a raft of changes which have gotten virtually no attention throughout the community. It's really sort of surprising that they're flying below radar. And when you think of it, this is our Constitution. This is our main document that we have to provide our governing structure for the East Baton Rouge Parish. It's been in existence since 1947. It went into effect in 1949, and it's been lightly amended since that time, only 17 times in the last 75 years. This time, on the ballot, will be hundreds of proposed changes to this document.
It's hundreds. And the wording is only a few hundred words, right?
Well, the wording is, unfortunately, virtually none. What the ballot actually says is there are changes to the amendments proposed, but if you want information, you'll have to go to a website or visit the consul administrator's office. In other words, There's no description on the ballot. There's no wording on the ballot which attempts to summarize what these amendments are or in any way describe them. So as a result, if you're in the ballot box, it's too late, obviously, to consult your a website or visit the council administrator staff. So the person is in a very hard position to cast an informed decision, and that's what disturbs.
And it's a high turnout election, so there will be a lot of people voting who probably are unaware of what it actually does, one way or the other.
Absolutely, because there has been no.
But what is it? What is it in the wording that you don't like? It's a sweeping measure, but the one that's gotten the most attention is a city manager
that would have
to be approved by the Metro Council.
Let me just sort of set the stage, though. Hundreds of changes. Most are technical changes, typographical changes, not significant. But there are 8 to 10 significant changes. And in this case, the voter will have no choice but to vote up or down. There is no differentiation. In other words, the more controversial proposals have not been singled out. The most significant change is what I call a halfway step to a change in the form of government for East Baton Rouge Parish, from a mayor-council form of government to a city parish manager. And that, I think, is significant. It doesn't sort of follow the norm as far as how city parish managers are generally used in other cities, but it is, in fact, a significant change in diluting or diminishing the power of the mayor's office over time, and as a result, I think has a very significant bearing on something that will affect all of us, but again, many people don't realize.
Well, both Mayor Broome and Ted James have expressed their opposition to this on this show, but Rowdy Goday, who's a good man, he's the one who pushed it through, and he says all this consternation is not appropriate, that it's not really that big of a deal. You look at it otherwise.
Yeah, let me explain why. Number one, it now mandates, it is not permissive anymore. In the previous charter, as it stands now, the mayor may appoint a chief administrative officer, making it permissive. Under the new language, the mayor shall, and I emphasize shall, making it mandatory, a city parish manager. Number two, that city parish manager is subject to selection by the mayor, but the Metro Council has the final say-so. In other words, it's up to the Metro Council to put together 7 votes to confirm or deny that. So it, as a result of that, the new city parish manager will be responsible for supervising all city departments.
We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow's playing the theme from Ironside. That's another Quincy Jones offering. The great one, Quincy Jones, who's married to Peggy Lipton of the Mod Squad. Dead at 91. Steve Myers is on deck, and Jim Brand with us for a few more moments. And he's not pleased with an item on the ballot, and a listener asked during the break how the heck did it get on the ballot.
It was actually a vote by the Metro Council this past March. It was not a unanimous vote by any means. It was 7 in favor, 2 opposed, 2 abstentions, and 1 not voting. But that was the 7 votes they needed to get it on the ballot, and I think it's interesting to note that many of the organizations that were involved in the study process, including Southern Law School, NAACP, LSU, and others, I haven't heard of any of those organizations, including the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, weigh in on this one way or the other. They were part of it, but again, it's really been Rowdy Goday's advocacy of this measure that has gotten it to this point. I just wanted to make one other point, too, regarding this proposal, the timing of it. Obviously, with St. George coming in and becoming an incorporated city, it will require an amendment to the plan of government that we now have. It would make sense to me that obviously when that transpires and we get straight with the city of St. George as far as what responsibilities will be carried by the city and the parish, then would be an appropriate time to bring back some of these amendments and present them in a manner that is fully understood and comprehended by the voters rather than the way they're being presented at this time.
All right. Thank you, Jim Brand. And Steve Myers is now taking the microphone, the founder of Tiger Rag, a lawyer and real estate magnate here in Baton Rouge, who owns about 60 properties and has been on this show for various reasons through the years. And he is running for mayor president of East Baton Rouge Parish. The election is tomorrow. Running as a Republican, Steve has run for a few offices, and I remember once he was elected to the Democratic State Central Committee, but he is now a Republican. And Steve Myers, along with Nathaniel Hearn and Coach Sid Edwards, are the three primary Republicans in the race. I think one other Republican has now gotten off the ballot. But Steve, you've stayed the course. I saw a front page story a few weeks ago in The Advocate saying that you got in the race after getting a call from one Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins. What happened?
Well, to put it simply, the demographics of this race are just starting to be understood by the normal voter. And unfortunately, we're in an environment where demographics, party label, race, sex sometimes, almost makes more difference than anything that would be a program or a platform. So when you look at the demographics of East Baton Rouge, there was an attitude that a white Republican could not win in East Baton Rouge anymore parish-wide, as well as in certain judicial districts, et cetera. And I kind of resent that because I think that the common voter really wants the problem solved. But the fact is we act like robots, and no matter how you cut it, you go look at the demographics, it's happening on a national level, and Democrats, black, women, white, Republican, it's very predictable, and these people are getting smarter and smarter. So I was asked to run by people in several campaigns, the idea being it would split the vote to the point where at least in the runoff would be two candidates that would be acceptable, if you will.
You're talking about Mayor Broome and Sid Edwards would be acceptable to Woody.
I think that's probably true, and the idea being, who is Ted James? He's had a campaign to show himself, if you will, because his record was clearly more liberal than even the mayor's. I mean, when you're mayor, you have to be mayor of all the people. So he didn't.
Well, even in the legislature, he was more liberal, but he has a lot of support from the conservative business community.
Yeah, and that is very interesting too, because you have to ask. I like to get and ask the question why.
Well, Jeff Landry had support from trial lawyers and from the Black Caucus. So,
and I asked the question, why? What promises were made for their agenda that allowed them to do that?
Well,
all I want is transparency. All I want people is to be honest
about
why they're running. I'm running in order to try to give people another option so the runoff ends up being truly the runoff between the two top candidates. I'm curious as to who
everybody... Well, now there's pressure to get you out of the race.
Yeah, a little bit. But, I mean, it's a little late for that. If I were to get out today, my votes
wouldn't count,
counted
for
any. And that
could be the difference between Sid Edwards making a runoff or not.
Depending on who would vote for me.
Well, you're probably going to get, I think you'll get some votes. You'll probably get a few percentage points. You got 4,256 votes in your last quest for mayor.
And that number is very vaguely familiar to me.
Same number of hits that Pete Rose got, the all-time hits leader.
But why would Ted James want me out of the race as well?
Does he want you out?
Yes, he asked first his people early.
I don't know. I think it probably works to his benefit. Although now, if he said on this show last week he thinks he'll finish first, so he might want you out because he would rather be, I don't know, in a runoff with one candidate or the other, and feels you would either hurt or help Edwards or Broome one way or the other. I can't read his mind.
Well, that's what makes this race interesting, because if you look at the pairings for the runoff, Edwards versus Broome, interesting. Where will the St. George people? Edwards versus Broome would be one.
She would be the heavy favorite in that race.
Right, that would be a total turnout, even though the demographics theoretically support the Republican. James versus Broome would be really interesting because the anybody but Broome crowd, some of these St. George people, would theoretically go to James, who would also get black Democrat votes. But people forget that St. George didn't pass by a landslide. A landslide the way we think of it today, 55, 45, or 54, but not like 60 or 70%. There's half of St. George that voted to stay in Baton Rouge.
54, I believe.
Yeah, so half of St. George people didn't even want St. George. So that doesn't guarantee they're going to vote for either Sid or for James.
A good point from the astute barrister.
So that's why Myers still has a chance with 16% undecided to make the runoff.
Well, the issues, we've talked a lot about process, but what issues separate the candidates and you in particular? What is your primary issue?
I don't think the issues, the problems, I like to say, everybody agrees on the problems, crime, garbage, litter, all of these other things. Crime is by far above. The question should be, what are the solutions? The one thing that I think shouldn't be an issue, at least in this race at this point in time, is economic development. I mean, as a Republican, I have questionable ideas about how involved government should be in pure economic development. They should be the referee, not the player. But if government's going to be involved, then we're thinking too small, saying we're going to redo the riverfront or we're going to do North Baton Rouge. I'm here to announce that if I'm elected mayor, we'll start immediately on a commission working with our legislators and the government to bring the Olympic Games to Southeast Louisiana in 2040.
The U.S. Olympics?
No, the World Olympics, the Olympiad.
The Olympiad.
We actually have a favorable...
Got to start building some hotels real quick, real fast.
You can build hotels in 8 years, or actually 2040 or 16 years.
All right. Well, that's a noble pursuit. I think we should think big. As Bill Arnsparger used to say,
right.
What did he say? Shoot for the moon and you might make the stars.
But it's not going to be just the Olympics. We're going to have a World's Fair at the same time. South Louisiana is going to be...
World's Fair.
South Louisiana is going to be hot in 2040.
Under Mayor Myers. Yes. Yeah, I'm talking. That's the kind of riverfront development that would change the world, literally. But I presume some of this is tongue-in-cheek, but I like the idea. I'd rather shoot for the moon and make the stars and not shoot at all. But Steve Myers, it is a listener asked a good question. If you were not in this race, for whom would you vote?
Well, that's a question you're not supposed to ask.
Well, why not?
That's like asking what gender I am.
Oh, come on. You know that's not.
Well.
I'm looking up my information. You are a chronic voter.
Well, yes. That's,
so you have voted in the last 9 years, I take it.
No, I voted. I actually called up when the Sid Edwards thing came out. I called up and the clerk said, we only go back to 97. You've only missed two elections. One of them, I actually remember in 2013 where I was out of town and it was a one item tax issue. The other one was actually an election I was involved in. I said, how could I not have voted in that? And I was actually in 2013 running for Justice of the Peace after I'd run for mayor. And I think it's a mistake, but I wasn't actually on that ballot even though I could.
Right. Run. I remember the case. But
by the way, Jim, can I give you a quickie here? You know, if Sid does happen to make it, I was scrolling through something, and look at the story of Zachary Taylor. Do you know when he was elected president of the United States in 1848?
From Baton Rouge.
Yes, from Baton Rouge, which caught my attention. He had never voted. He was actually a Democrat who got out of the party because he didn't like the Democrats' slavery position, ran as a Whig, said I'm not going to campaign, and was elected. My position today.
Well, you voted in every election except one since 97, and Coach Sid is working on his first in 9 years, so there we go. But it's appropriate, since Quincy Jones died, to close our show today, since you belong to all the parties. Here was the song that made Quincy Jones famous. He produced it. It was number one with a bullet from Leslie Gore. And if you're unaware, the name of the song was It's My Party, and tomorrow it's everybody's party. Please vote whatever your affiliation, and we'll be back on Election Day. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.